the subject for this little thought we have this afternoon. We want to start in Genesis, first chapter, the first verse. In the beginning, God created heaven and earth, and the earth was out form and void. Darkness was upon the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. And God said, "Let there be light." And there was light. And God saw the light, and that it was good. And God divided the light from the darkness. And God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And the evening and the morning were the first day. Our subject today, this afternoon, is day. Days. What does it mean, days? God, in the beginning, created a certain space of time that it would be light, and he called it day. And there's a certain space of time, and it was dark, he called it night. So day is the measurement of time. It's a measurement of a certain amount of passing of time.
Yes.
And in our day and age, have you noticed that as you get older, that the days go by quicker? It seems like time passes more quickly, and you feel like that when you were a child, there was this space of a day, and it seemed like a day was a long space of time.
Yeah.
And it took a long time to get from one day to the next. And if you were waiting for something special to happen, it took a long time for those days to go by. And then as you start growing older and you have children of your own, and you notice how there isn't enough time in the day to get everything done that you want to get done. Day is a day is a passage of time. And God created it. And he created it for a specific purpose, not only to have light for us to work and do all those things, but it was to remind us of the passage of time. If we only had daylight, it would be very hard to mark the passage of time. It wouldn't be divided into minutes and seconds and days and then months and then years. And it would be very difficult to mark the passage of time. But God is very, very much concerned with the passage of time.
Yes, he is.
With the passage of days.
Yes.
And days is a way to measure almost everything. There's only one thing that days won't measure and won't count, and that's an eternity. But in this time world, the passage of a day is very, very important in the sight of God. And in this day and age, we have, there are so many people that are doing what they want to do and the way they want to do it, and they're wasting their days. Each one of us has a specific number of days allotted to us in this life. And every day that we live, one of those days is ticking off of our life here on this earth. And one of these days, it will be our last day. Every one of us is going to come to our last day. Whether we come to it because we die and pass on out of this world, or whether we are here present at that last great day when Jesus appears. One way or another, there's going to be a day that is our last. Our very last day. Now, if we knew the day that was going to be our last, we would probably do different.
Yes.
Some of us, though, if we were, say, teenagers, and we knew that our last day wasn't until we were in our 50s, we might live a very wicked and sinful life up until almost that last day and then try to be saved.
Yes.
Or if we were teenagers and we knew that our last day was going to be in a couple of months, there'd be a real difference in our life, wouldn't there? We'd more than likely, if we weren't already saved, we'd more than likely get saved. And we'd be real careful counting up to that last day. But God doesn't let us know. our last day. Our last day is going to come upon us, and we aren't going to know when that is. So it's very important that we look at each one of our days and count it as our last.
Yes.
Count every one of the days that you live as your last, because you don't know. If you count every one of your days as your last day, one of these days it will be the last one and you will be ready.
Yes.
But if you have a tendency to forget about the passage of time and days go by and nights and months and years and you don't pay any attention to the passage of days, you don't count it as your last day, then you might be caught unawares. And most people are caught unaware.
Yes.
About their last day on this earth. Their last opportunity to be saved. Their last opportunity to make their wrongs right. Their last opportunity to say those words that they need to say. They're caught unawares. How many times have you heard about someone has died in a family and the children or different ones get around and they gather around and they say, "Oh, I wish I'd have said so-and-so," or "I wish I could have told him this," or "I wish I could have told her that." But you see, count every day as your last. Count every one of their days as their last. It could be their last day. Do what you should be doing today, because you're not promised tomorrow. Now, there was a time in Jonah's day, when the Lord sent Jonah three, four, and five. We know that Jonah was sent on a mission to tell a city that they had only so many days left.
Yes.
Just so many days left. There weren't going to be a lot of them, just a few. And these people were wicked. The city was wicked. God was grieved that the city was so wicked. But what did he do? He sent a warning. God is so fair, so faithful, so just, so justified in all of his dealings with us. He sent them a warning. He sent Jonah. Jonah went through a lot to get there, but he finally got there. But when he got there, it said in the fourth verse, "And Jonah began to enter into the city a day's journey. And he cried and said, 'Yet 40 days, and Nineveh shall be overthrown.'" So what did the people do? The people of Nineveh believed God and proclaimed a fast and put on sackcloth, from the greatest of them even to the least of them. It goes on to say how the king, you know, declared that everyone, nothing was to eat, nothing was to drink, everything was to be covered with sackcloth and ashes, so that just possibly, God could change his mind. But they believed God. Now, what do you think happened to those people? Now, here was a wicked, wicked city. Very wicked. And God was going to utterly destroy the whole thing. What do you think happened when here this man came walking into their town? No doubt they didn't know him. Maybe they'd never seen him before. And he started preaching to them about 40 days, and God's going to destroy this place.
Yes.
Now, what would you think would make those people that were so wicked, living in such a wicked way, believe God? Why did they believe him? Why did those people believe God at that time? Well, one possible reason is that anybody's willing to try anything if it means saving their life, just maybe he's telling the truth. Some of them might have done it for that reason. But I believe that most of them, what happened was that after Jonah had gone through all that he went through and came to that city and started preaching to that city, God had so prepared him and so anointed him that when the words came out, an immediate fear gripped the people.
Yes.
A fear gripped them. There's no way to turn a wicked person around. Feared at what would happen. And they believed him. Now, when they believed him, then they had sackcloth and ashes. They prayed, you know, that God possibly, just possibly, would cause this not to happen. But do you know those people weren't counting on it? They weren't counting on God changing his mind. They weren't counting on it. If someone came to you and let you know that you only had so much time left, and that you better get ready, and they didn't tell you that if you're real good, maybe God will change his mind, because Nineveh didn't tell people that. He just told them they were going to be destroyed.
Yes.
And if someone were to come to you and tell you that you're going to be destroyed, completely and utterly destroyed in a certain number of days, wouldn't fear grip your heart? If you heard something in the news that there was a great army coming, or they had set off all the atomic bombs around the world and they were all headed for the United States, wouldn't fear grip your heart? Fear would grip your heart. But do you know that in this day and age, God sends out his warning over and over and over. He sends it through his messengers. He sends it through the Bible, through the teaching. And even he himself grips the hearts of men and women and lets them know the end is coming.
Yes.
And they go right on. He lets them know that there's a last day coming. And they go right on. He lets them know what the punishment is going to be. He's even gone so far as to tell us what the punishment will be should we neglect and not be ready on that last great day. And people go right on.
Yes.
There's no fear. No fear in the people's hearts. No fear in their innermost workings. They're so filled with themselves. So filled with their own importance. So filled with their own thoughts and ideas. That the idea that there's a last day seems a long ways away. And then in our time and age, you know how they count time in our time and age. Used to be years ago, they didn't have calendars that they could stretch out for years and years in advance. Now they can put it on a computer. They can tell you 100 years from now what this, if October 31st will fall on a Thursday. They can do that, but they didn't used to be able to do that. But see, science and all has expanded time in people's minds.
Yes.
It hasn't expanded in reality, but it's expanded it in people's minds. People's minds have a tendency to look out and see time going on for a long time. Their lives have been expanded. Through medical science and good nutrition and understanding how to combat disease and just learning that washing your hands killed bacteria began to save a lot of people from destruction. And those kind of things have come to us, and so our lives have been expanded from what they used to be. They used to be much shorter. And our lives have been expanded. So we've had an increase in our days on the earth. And now all of us, probably these little young children sitting here, expect to live to a very, very ripe old age. Most of us in middle age expect to live to old age. And even those that are in their elder years, they still expect several, maybe many years left.
Yes.
Time. But time, see, is marching on.
Yes.
Days are ticking off. Not only are they ticking off in our own hearts, our own lives, when our life will end, but there's a last great day. And God said nobody would know when that day was. Now, according to some reports in the paper that Brother Taylor was sharing with us, it was supposed to end yesterday. Several religious groups had gotten together and they thought the world was going to end yesterday.
Yes.
I can guarantee you, If you ever hear anybody say it's going to end on a particular day, I can guarantee you it will not end on that day. Because no one knows when it's going to end. And God would not allow people to predict when that day is when He won't even tell His son. He wouldn't let him. He hasn't told His son. Why hasn't He told His son? Well, Jesus is interceding. He's interceding for us. And Jesus, unlike us, is not confined to days. He's not confined to a day and a day and so many days and a month and so many days and a year. He's in eternity. He's not confined to days. And Jesus is pleading with the Father for us, for our souls, continually. There is no day. There is no lifespan. There is no last great day in Jesus' mind. He's continually interceding for us, drawing us, and trying to bring us to the Father. Days, they're ticking off, they're running out. Science has expanded the days. They can now look back and tell you what day it was 200 years ago, how everything was lined up in the stars and everything, and how they've moved. Man has sought out many, many scientific, he calls them discoveries. God knew it from the beginning, but he calls them discoveries. And he looks out into all of this, and he looks at, they have places now where they are freezing people, freezing their brains, so that at some future date that they just know, these people just know that they're going to be able at some future date to clone a body, give you a new body, and put your brain in it. Isn't that a horrible thought? But they're convinced that they're going to be able to do this someday. So they're freezing. But do you know the sad part about this? This freezing? Do you know that they have to be frozen alive? Did you know that? They can't be frozen after they're dead. These people, literally, get down on their deathbeds, or whatever, and allow them to inject them with whatever it is they inject them with, and allow them to freeze them. Take them out of this life. They do that. Because they feel like once you're dead, like if you die in a car accident on the street, your brain would be dead too long to be able to be used. So sometimes the people are in the hospitals and they haven't hooked up to machines and it keeps their brain alive, and then they freeze it. The person's basically already gone, but then they freeze it. Isn't that a sad thing? Counting on some future day to come back. And do you know those souls? Do you know where those souls are? Eternity.
Yes.
They're either in eternal torment or they're in heaven with the Lord. Think about that. Every soul that passes out of this life is in one place or the other.
That's so.
They don't have an opportunity to switch. They will not have an opportunity to come back. They will not be able to clone a body someday and bring any of these people back. Their souls are gone forever. They're gone forever.
Yes.
And yet medical science presumes to take the place of God and bring you back. Isn't that a horrible thought? They stretched out time. You would hear about hundreds and thousands. Now you hear about millions, billions, trillions. When I was growing up, I can remember thinking, they used to talk about the government and how much they were spending and all this, and you would hear the figure millions, you know. Now what are they talking? Trillions. Trillions. And every time we hear things like that, we get this sense of a long time we have. This sense of expanding time. You know, you can take a million, and if you count off a million, is it a million? Yes, 1 million. And if you go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 to every second that goes on the clock, it will take you 13 days to count to a million. Now that's a lot. It's a lot. But you could, in 13 days, if you never missed a second, you would be able to count to 1 million. All right, but do you know how much bigger a billion is? Do you know how much bigger that is? If you were to do the same thing and count 1 second, 1, 2, 3, the seconds, it would take you 31 years. 31 years. See how science and all that we hear, it's expanding in our minds, it's expanding time, and God told us time's winding up.
Yes.
But they're expanding time in our mind. We feel like we have a lot of time. We have a lot of time. We don't have a lot of time. There's going to be, our last day is coming. Either in us or in the world, the last day is coming.
Yes.
And we're receiving warnings. And warnings, just like in Jonah's time, warnings, warnings, and warnings. And we sit, and we sit, and we hear, and we ignore the warnings. And we go on with our life, trusting in some future date. You know, I'm not going to get saved until I get to, you know, this, or I'm going to get me a husband first, or I'm going to do this first, or I want to do that first, because I know after I get saved, I won't be able to do that. And not knowing the most foolish thing. Not even knowing when your last day is. Not even knowing. But God knows. And He sends, do you know there are times He sends special warnings to people that are on the edge.
Yes.
On the edge of going out into eternity. I was in Guthrie camp meeting one time. It was like the last day of the meeting. And there was a young man sitting right in front of me, and I didn't know any of the people there, and I don't know him, I don't know his name, I don't know the family's name, I'm just going to tell you the story. And he was sitting on the bench, and they preached the message, I don't remember who preached, and we stood up to sing altar call, and that boy, he was sitting behind me, that's what it was, he was sitting behind me, and that boy had gripped the bench that I was, you know, seated on or up against. And he was shaking so bad, he was shaking my whole bench. Literally shaking in altar call. Brother Busby, who was here during the first of the meeting, he happened to be walking down the aisle. And he touched this young man on the shoulder. And asked him if... said a few words to him, encouragement. In other words, trying to encourage him to go to the altar. And the boy just stood there and held. He gripped that bench and he held on. And he shook. And you can tell sometimes people are under conviction, but they won't move. They grip the bench. They do whatever they can to keep from moving.
Yeah.
The enemy does that. He makes them feel like this is some fearful thing to go forward. And it's not. But he causes a fear to come over. The rest of the time, he won't let you hardly fear a thing. But when it comes to going to the altar, he will put fear over you to move, to reach out. Anyway, after the meeting was over, and I went home. Well, maybe I hadn't gone home. I think that was the time that I got sick and I had to stay for a few days. And they had Wednesday night prayer meeting. I think it was a Wednesday. Well, whenever they have prayer meeting, they had a prayer meeting. And in this prayer meeting, this young man came to prayer meeting. And there was a special burden going out for this young man. And one of the sisters there talked to him and, you know, kind of pleaded with him to give his heart to the Lord. And there were several others that spoke to him that night, but he didn't do anything. And do you know that boy died the next day? He died. He had no intention of dying. There was nothing. He wasn't sick. But he went out swimming. He went out swimming with a friend. And he swam out into the middle of this, whatever they were swimming in. And he went under. And he came up once. and hollered for help. I think they said he came up, the boy that was with him, said he came up 3 times, hollered for help, and then he went down and never came back up. God sent a special warning to him, a special invitation. God wanted to save him. God didn't want, he's not willing that any perish. He's not willing that any perish. But that young man rejected, you know, those warnings, those drawings.
Yes.
We need to take heed. When someone comes to us and they talk to us and they deal with us and they try to bring us to the Lord, we need to take pay special attention. It may be a special warning coming from God that you don't have much time left and that you need to be ready.
Yes.
God was willing to accept that man, that young boy, at the 11th hour.
Yes.
He was willing to do that. He was willing to accept him and save him right then before he went out into eternity. He was willing to do that. But the young man wasn't willing to do. He wasn't willing to give up his life. Give up his life for the Lord. And he had so very few days left. And he didn't know. Now, if he'd have known, do you think it would have been like that? I don't think so. I think if he'd known that he had less than a week to live, I think that he'd have gone to the altar that night. I don't think the devil could have scared him away. I don't think the devil could have kept him in his seat and hanging on that bench and shaking. I don't think he could have resisted the pleading of the saints in the prayer meeting. I think he'd have come to the altar. He'd have gotten saved. But see, our days are ticking off.
Yes.
We haven't got very many days left. I want to turn to Matthew, the 24th chapter, starting at the 36th verse. But of that day and hour knoweth no man, no, not the angels of heaven, but my Father only. But as the days of Noah were, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. Now, here's a sign. Here's a sign. He's given us a warning in the Word. This is the sign that you look for. You look for this. That it's going to be just like in the days of Noah.
Yes.
Just like then. For as in the days that were before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered into the ark. Well, some people might say, well, that doesn't sound like much of a warning. That doesn't sound like much of a warning. We've been eating and drinking ever since then. We've been marrying and giving in marriage ever since then. You're right. That's the point. You're not going to know. You're not going to know. No special event is going to take place to give you a warning that it's going to be in a week. There aren't going to be mysterious things happening. There aren't going to be special, you know, that nothing's going to happen any different than what you're seeing and doing and hearing now. Until the day that Noah entered into the ark, and knew not until the flood came. Didn't even know on the day he entered the ark. They had been listening to Noah preach for how many years? Something like 120 or something like that.
Yes.
They had been hearing him say, a rain's coming. And we've heard the story how that in those days it didn't rain. There was just a mist went out. And they thought, rain? We've never seen rain. You know, this man is crazy. He doesn't know what he's talking about. And then he started building this huge, huge ship on dry land. And these people mocked and laughed at him. But he had been warned. He was warned of God. And knew not until the flood came. Didn't even know until the flood came. Do you know? Those people were so wicked that they heard the warning over and over and over. They hardened their hearts, wouldn't listen, felt they had plenty of time. Life was going on just as it always had. Nothing had happened that would cause them to think their lives were almost ready to end. Do you realize the lives of all those people in the whole world, except for Noah and his family, were going to end?
Yes.
They weren't going to end.
And none of them knew it. Nobody knew it. Only Noah. He tried to warn him. Nobody believed him.
So what happened? They knew not until the flood came and took them all away. Then it says, just like that, where they were eating and drinking, and there may have been marriages on that very day. They had had their noon meal already. They had already married. They were giving in marriage, eating, drinking. Some of them may have just sat down to have a nice, cool drink of water. And the rain came. And as that rain began to pour, and it began to stack up on the earth, those people became alarmed.
Yes.
But the door was already shut. The door was already shut. They didn't listen to the warning that had come their way. So it says, they were eating, drinking, giving in marriage, and knew not until the flood came and took them all away, and it says, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. It will be just like that. There's going to be eating, drinking, having meals, and everything. Just there's not going to be any warning until the Lord comes through the clouds. That last day, the Lord comes through the clouds. Once you see that, it's too late.
Yes, that's so.
It's too late. You'll cry for rocks and mountains, but it's too late. It's too late. It's too late to enter in because you've seen the final sign, which is Jesus coming through the clouds. But you've been warned. There won't be a person that hasn't been warned. In some form or another, there won't be a person that hasn't been warned. Those that are in different countries and don't understand much of anything, maybe not even have a Bible or access to one. Jesus has dealt with them individually. They have been warned. And just like in Noah's day, when those people were out there, just like that, the Son of Man is going to come. Just like that. So, it could be today.
That's so.
We ate today. We slept last night. Somebody, no doubt, somewhere got married today. Do you know there's going to be, on your last day, there's going to be a last meal? You can cut it down even closer than that. There's going to be a last meal. There's going to be a last hour. There's going to be a last minute. There's going to be a last heartbeat. And it could be yours, just you personally, your last day. Or it could be the whole world. There'll be a last. See, there's a last day coming. And people are ignoring it. Ignoring it going on and just hurling millions and millions out into eternity. Their last days. Look at the obituary every day in the paper. And there's how many across the United States die every day? All the time, someone is dying. Someone is dying probably every second of the day, which is the smallest section of time that we go by, a second. Somebody just died. Now maybe 5 people have gone. You wait 5 more seconds, 10 people are gone. People are being hurled out into eternity. Just hurled out. But we have a warning.
That's so.
We have a warning. The 7th chapter of Matthew, 21st verse. Matthew 7:21-23. Not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father, which is in heaven. Many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in thy name? And in thy name have cast out devils, and in thy name done many wonderful works? And then will I profess unto them, I never knew you. Depart from me, ye that work iniquity. Depart from me. The world is full of religion. Full of, oh, so many different kinds of religion. And some worship this way and some worship that. Some worship the true God and some don't. Some worship idols. Some worship themselves. And all of these doctrines that are in the world, all of these doctrines, there are people in them saying, Lord, Lord. Lord, Lord. They're praying to their gods. They're sacrificing. They're giving of their time and their money and their talents. And some of them give their bodies to be burned. You've heard of the people that, monks and different ones, that some kind of priests that when they protest something, they set their bodies on fire and burn to death in protest to something in the world that they feel like is wrong. Give their bodies to be burned. Sacrifice. Great sacrifices. Great, great sacrifices. But what does it get them in the end? Without true salvation, they're lost forever in eternity. Lost forever in eternity. There are millions that are going on good works, think they're going to make it in, knowing that they're not doing right in their heart, knowing that they're not acting right, but they think their good works are going to get in. There are those that give great sums of money and feel like that's going to get them in. They support the cause, they give to this needy thing and that needy thing and multiple charities, and that's going to get them in. There are those that feel like that, well, my religion doesn't exactly match the Bible, but it's close enough. It's close enough. You know, some of those things were just for the old times people anyway. They're not for our age. They're not for our time. Healing isn't for our time. That was something that was to show this new religion that was coming on the earth. That's what they say. But in the midst of all that, Lord, Lord, we prophesied in your name. We preached. We taught. We told people. We got people interested. We got them coming to our church and we got members and they sit in our seats today and we have a great multitude. And Lord, we prophesied in thy name. And we cast out devils. Now, how did they do that? Well, I'll tell you how they did that. The devil's the one that has the control of all devils. He has the control of them. And when they cast out devils, the devil just did it. And they think, oh, what a wonderful God we serve. He cast out devils. And the devil puts them in and the devil can take them out. They obey him. They're his servants. Deceiving the people. Thinking, working mighty, wonderful works, miracles. Working miracles. Miracles. In front of the wonderful works. Real wonderful works. How does that happen? The enemy. He's second in power to God. He is. He can do mighty things. He's corrupted a whole world. He's taking the majority of the people with him to hell. He's very powerful. He's second in power. So he can do mighty, wonderful works to deceive. Only to deceive. Deceive you. And then will I profess unto them, I never knew you. I never knew you. You didn't seek me with your whole heart. Get a pardon from your sins. You didn't live right. The times I did talk to you through your life, you cast off half of everything I told you. You obeyed half, just enough to ease your conscience, but the rest of it you threw off. You heard the truth over and over and over and cast it aside.
Yes.
There are those that have heard the truth over and over and over again, cast it aside, and go to services somewhere else.
Yes.
They feel like if they take half,
yes,
it's enough. It's not enough. You have to accept all the truth, the whole Bible. You have to live by the whole thing. Everything that you know and understand. And some things maybe sometimes you don't understand. You have to live by some things you don't understand. What sister in the Lord would understand a husband leaving her? We don't understand those things. But we live anyway. We go on living for the Lord and trusting Him, but we don't understand some of those things. We don't have everything revealed to us. But we're to heed the warnings that come our way. 1 Thessalonians, 5th chapter, the 2nd verse, reading down through the 6th. For yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord so cometh as a thief in the night. For when they shall say, peace and safety, then sudden destruction come upon them as a travail upon a woman with child, and they shall not escape. But ye, brethren, are not in darkness, that that day should overtake you as a thief. Ye are all the children of light, and the children of the day. We are not of the night, nor of darkness. Therefore, let us not sleep, as do others, but let us watch and be sober. Do you know that there's a warning for us to watch and be sober? Because there's going to be some people, they're going to be caught unawares. And they're going to find themselves in a really tight, tight place. They may need to say an apology to their husband or their wife. And maybe they needed to apologize to their husband and they got a little stubborn. Let's send him off to work. And then what if the Lord comes through the clouds? What are you going to do? What are you going to do? Can you enter in with that? God will be the judge. He'll be the judge. He won't be coming back as a savior then. He won't be coming back with loving arms stretched out and saying, oh, come, come all ye that are heavy laden, I'll give you rest, come. He won't be coming back like that. He'll be coming back as the judge. And he'll be separating the sheep from the goats. And you know, you won't have to be told what you are. You won't have to be told what you are. If you've been living a hypocritical life, you won't have to be told where you go. Which line am I supposed to get into? You won't have to be told. There's a last day. A last day. It's going to be so important to meet that last day fully prepared. Because it's the only way you make it in. The only way you make it into heaven. The only way you escape torment is to be ready in that last day. He's coming as a thief in the night. How does a thief in the night? Well, he waits till dark so nobody sees him coming. And then he waits till everyone is sleeping, slumbering, not paying attention.
Yes.
And he sneaks in and steals. Someday he's going to steal your soul.
Yes.
So far he's just stealing your happiness.
Yes.
He's stealing your peace. He's stealing everything that's wonderful and good that God put on this earth for us to enjoy. He's stealing that from you. But one day it'll be your soul.
Yes.
He'll come as a thief in the night and steal your soul. And you'll be lost eternally. Forever and ever. No end. No end. So hard for us to comprehend eternity. What it's going to mean. Eternity. We sing about it. Think about it. But you know how we think about it? It's hard to not put days in there. You know, it's hard to think of it as eternally light, no darkness, eternally light, no days, no way to count, no counting, no counting. in eternity. Second Peter 3. The third chapter, Second Peter 3:3. Knowing this first, that there shall come in the last days scoffers walking after their own lusts and saying, where is the promise of his coming? For since the fathers fell asleep, all things continue as they were from the beginning of creation. We've been hearing this for years. Children sit in these benches, older people, middle-aged people, they sit in it. You've been hearing this same story for years now, haven't you? You've been hearing this same story. And we get to thinking, because we've been hearing it for so long, and it hasn't happened, we get to thinking that it's not important. That it's not something that should alarm us right now. Because they've been telling us this story since I was a little girl. They've been telling us this story. Hasn't happened yet. Hasn't happened yet. That's what they say. Scoffers. For this they willingly are ignorant, that by the word of God the heavens were of old, and the earth standing out of the water and in the water, whereby the world that then was, being overflowed with water, perished. See, why are they willingly ignorant? Because they've also heard the story of Noah. They've also heard that. Yeah. And they've heard how that the last day is going to come just like Noah's day. They've heard all those things. And they're still willingly ignorant. Not taking it to heart. Ignoring it. Going on in their sinful ways. And their days are slipping by. Yeah. One by one by one. But the heavens and the earth, which are now by the same word, are kept in store, reserved unto fire against the day of judgment and perdition of ungodly men. But, beloved, be not ignorant of this one thing, that one day is with the Lord as 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is one day. No time for the Lord. One day to Him is like 1,000 years. 1,000 years is one day. No time. No time. God has reached out into eternity. And He has set a marker. That's the end. Right there. He's reached out. That's the end. And however long it takes for us to count the days here to get there, that's how long it is. Because God doesn't count days. He doesn't see days like we do. He has eternity to deal with. There's a day appointed. There's a day appointed unto man. A day you're going to die individually. And there's a day appointed in the future, we don't know how far, that's appointed for the world to die. Appointed. Already fixed. Can't be moved. Even Jesus' pleading for souls will not move the day. You may almost be persuaded and miss it. Jesus may be dealing with your heart, and you may almost be ready to go to the altar and Jesus come through the clouds. God says to Jesus, now is the time. And He goes through the clouds. And you were almost, just almost mistaken. Not quite, almost. The Lord is not slack concerning His promise, as some men count slackness, but is long-suffering to usward, not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance. That's why.
Yes.
That's why He suffered it to go on now.
Yes.
That's why it's still going on. He's not willing for any to perish. He's not willing for any to perish. None. But they're perishing every day. Because they allow their days to tick off until they're gone. And God can't stop it. He can't stop it. He set up certain principles and certain laws when He created the world. And He can't, He isn't going to cross those laws and change things. Men are going to die. And it's how their soul is when they die, where they're going to go.
Yes.
Now, I told you this morning a little bit about when I got saved. But I didn't tell you what had happened to me before I got saved. What it was that the Lord kept dealing with me about and making my heart soft and putting the fear of God in me. Putting the fear of God in me. I had some dreams. And in my dreams, I had in my mind the Lord. I knew a little bit about salvation. And my sister-in-law had been dealing with me some. And I was thinking about salvation. I wasn't ready yet. But I was thinking about it. Pondering it now and then and wondering about it. When I'd get into trouble, I'd wonder a little harder. And then I'd get out of trouble and I'd quit. But one night, I had a dream. I had in my mind that, well, I'd wait until my husband got saved. Then I'd just get saved and we'd be fine. No, it didn't work like that. I got saved, and it was 4 years before my husband got saved. But the point is that I had in my mind, well, I'll wait. I'll wait for him. Well, what if he never got saved?
That's right.
What if I died before he got saved? He could go on maybe then and get saved, and he'd end up in heaven, and I'd end up in hell. So I had in my mind, I'd wait for him, because I had seen some little things that had kind of alarmed me, you know, some of the sisters that were saved and their husbands were, and some of the things they went through, and it alarmed me a little bit, and I thought, I don't think I want to do that. Yeah. I think I want to keep some of my rights. I want to fight back a little. So, but the Lord gave me a dream. And in this dream, this verse says, I didn't know this verse was in the Bible until after I had these dreams. And then I went to my sister-in-law and I asked her, I said, are there any verses in the Bible, you know, that tell about the end of the world? She said, yes. They showed them to me. And I was astounded. I was astounded how perfectly these scriptures matched what I saw. And I had never heard them before. But it says here, but the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in the which the heavens shall pass away with a great noise.
Yeah.
Well, in my first dream, I dreamt I was standing outside. It was nighttime. And my husband was standing right there with me. See, the Lord was trying to, he was going to get something to me. He was standing right there with me. And all of a sudden, things begin to happen. And the heavens begin to, what I call, boil. They started churning and boiling and exploding. And the pieces of whatever was up there, the planets, stars, whatever, were landing in big chunks all around us. And I knew in my heart, this is the last day. This is the end. And I knew immediately I was not ready. And do you want to know something else? I didn't even care about my husband standing right there with me. It made no difference. I never gave him a thought. All I thought about is I'm lost. Oh no, it caught me. I'm lost. It scared me so bad it woke me up. And I laid there in bed and I trembled and trembled and trembled. I couldn't go back to sleep. I was so scared. And do you know how the Lord is so gracious and he did that for me? But you know, if you don't act immediately, when the Lord deals with you, act immediately because it slips away.
That's right.
And it slipped away. The next night when I went to bed, I was a little fearful to go to sleep because I was afraid I'd have another one. But I didn't. And then the next day, and the next day, and the next day. And pretty soon, I was kind of able to just kind of forget it, you know. Don't think about it. So just don't worry about it. Well, I think that if I'd have written the dates of these dreams down, I think that I had one a month, one a month for 3 months, and I would say that they were probably all on the exact same day. Because they were just about a month apart. And a month later, I went to sleep, and by that time I pretty much washed that experience out, and the Lord gave me another dream. And the next part of it is, being the first part, the heavens shall pass away with a great noise. The elements shall melt with fervent heat. And in this dream, I was with my husband again. He was right there with me. We were standing out on a hillside. And off in the distance, you know, we were taught about atomic bombs when we were in school. They showed us pictures of what they looked like, this big mushroom cloud that went up. And the scariest thing about an atomic bomb, when they taught us about it, was what they called the heat wave. That supposedly atomic bomb is very close to you. If you're close enough to see it, the heat wave is going to get you. And that heat wave radiates out from there, and it just burns everything in its path. And we were on this hillside, him and I together. And we looked off in the distance, and one of those bombs went off, and that mushroom cloud formed, and all I could think of was the heat. The heat's going to get us any second. The heat's going to be here. And I didn't care a thing about him. I didn't think about him. I didn't worry about him. I didn't worry about, oh, poor him, he missed it. Oh, no, I was completely and utterly concerned for myself.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, it's the end. And I missed it. I missed it. I'm not saved. It's the end. It's the most horrible. I believe that I felt in those dreams what people feel. It is the most horrible suffering, sinking, distressing feeling you have ever felt. It's total, total lack of hope. Hopelessness. Total hopelessness. Elements shall melt with fervent heat. Well then, that one scared me, woke me up. Couldn't go back to sleep. Was afraid to go to sleep the next night. But I put it off, covered it up. I didn't tell anybody about these dreams. I was afraid to tell anybody. You know, I don't know what it is, but I was afraid to even speak of them. And I just kept them all and didn't think about it. And it kind of gradually got away from me again. You know how it'll do. You don't act when the God's dealing with your heart. It'll get away from you. It won't last very long. There's only a small little place that God can work, and then the door is shut again.
Yeah.
And he has to wait for his next opportunity. Well, about a month later, I had another dream. Caught me by surprise. Wasn't expecting it. And I had a dream, and my husband and I, again, were together. Together. We were standing outside, and all you could see, as far as you could see, was fire. Tall walls, sheets of fire on all the horizons. Any way you looked were flames and sheets of fire. And I realized it's the end, and I'm not ready. And that horrible, sinking, gripping feeling, it gripped my heart and it gripped my soul. And you're in such torment and anguish to know I missed it. I'm going to be forever in these flames. Forever. And I never thought of him at all. The Lord was trying to deal with me. Let me know. You can't wait for him. Because in the end, it won't matter. It won't matter. You can't wait for college. You can't wait for a companion. Because in the end, it won't matter. It just will not matter. Well, anyway, after I dreamt that one, I was the one that did it. That was the one that pierced me so deep that I couldn't get away from it. And it was still all on my mind when I told you about having trouble with my husband this morning and what I did. That was still all in my mind. It was still pondering in my mind. But yet and still, when I went to be prayed for, I had no intention of getting saved. But when I got down on my knees, do you know what came to my mind? Those dreams came to my mind. And I got saved. But see, it's going to happen just like this. It's going to happen. Everything is going to be destroyed. And the horrible, sinking, utterly lost feeling that overcomes you at that point when you realize, I am lost for eternity. Eternity. No chance of getting in. No chance. No chance of getting out. No chance at all. Days. That last great day is coming. Days when it's going to mean everything, everything to be saved. 1 Thessalonians 4, 16 and 17. For the Lord himself shall descend from heaven with a shout, with the voice of the archangel, and with the trump of God, and the dead in Christ shall rise first. Then we which are alive and remain shall be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air, and so shall we ever be with the Lord. So shall we ever be with the Lord. Those of us that are ready. To be ready means everything. You will escape the most horrible thing that you can imagine. You will escape the fires of eternal damnation. You'll receive, you'll not only escape, but you'll receive something. You'll receive the eternal light, beauty, and glory of being in heaven with God. And the last scripture says, wherefore, comfort one another with these words.